Parshas Kisavo. So our format allows us to focus on this one Aliyah, and it's really a relatively short Aliyah, not even relatively, objectively it's a short Aliyah, but only in terms of words and psukim. It's a very chock full Aliyah. The second Aliyah of Parshas Kisavo is four psukim long. In general, Kisavo is a little lopsided in terms of both length and theme. We know that we have Tokacha, which is a certain very harsh tone, and the beginning of the Aliyah, the beginning Aliyahs of the Parsha are much more cheerful and much happier themes. So we read about Bikurim in the first Aliyah. We spoke about that last year. And the second brief Aliyah, which is short in psukim but long in themes, very long in themes, this second Aliyah talks about Meiser. And one of the major themes that comes up is the recitation that accompanies the beer that the Torah tells us in Parshas Re'eh, it's in Pasuk Perek Yudal and Pasuk Chavches. The Torah tells us that there is an obligation of getting rid of all the Meiser, so to speak, if that's the right term, essentially taking out of your house, that you have the Meiser that is associated with the Leviim, the Meiser Rishon, that's every year, the three-year cycle. There's 2 3-year cycles. Well, then every Shemitah, you're off for Shemitah, but you have two sets of three. So the first two of those 3 year cycles, you have both a Meiser Rishon for the Leviim, and you have a Meiser Sheni, which the Bailim eat in Yerushalayim. And the third year, instead of Meiser Sheni, so you have Meiser Ani. And the Torah tells us that at the end of every 3-year cycle, so twice in a Shemitah, you have to get everything out of your house. So Biartim and Abayis, you take all of these stored up Meisros, and you send them off to where they're supposed to be. And that's called beer. And the beer is accompanied by Vidui. A little bit of a machlokus when this takes place. It takes place Pesach time, so it's not 100% clear. If you look at Rashi, you look at some of the other Rishonim, you look at some of the sources in Chazal, there's a little bit of a debate whether this takes place on Erev Pesach or Erev Yontif Achron Shal Pesach. This is this beer process, but it's associated with Pesach. And then immediately following that, there is a recitation which Chazal call Vidui. It's not the language of the Pasuk, but it is the language of the Mishnah in Sota, in the seventh parak of Sota, to call this Vidui Meiser. It sounds like that's the phrase that we use specifically for this. In the first Aliyah, we talked about Bikurim, so there's a recitation there as well. There's some debate whether that's called Vidui as well, but it's clear that Chazal did call this Vidui Meiser, and that's one of the most often commented upon topics in the parasha as a whole. The fact that this language of Vidui really does not seem appropriate, doesn't seem to be the right language for what's going on here, because we'll look at the psukim in some more detail. But the psukim are very different from what we associate with Vidui, specifically at this time of year. Right now, we're about to start Slichos, and we're heading into the Aseret Yemei Teshuva and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We're going to be reciting Vidui many times over. And the format of Vidui that we have does not really match these psukim at all. The format of Vidui is essentially Chatosi, Avisi, Pashaiti. We talk about how terrible we are. I stink, I'm horrible, I'm a loser, I'm awful. And here, the psukim are really quite the opposite. We'll get into some detail, but we say things like Lo avarti al mitzvosecha velo shachachti, asisi kechol asher tzivisoni. I'm essentially perfect, I've done everything right, I haven't forgotten anything. So it's not really clear how there's any connection between that and what we call Vidui. The language seems to be very ironic, perhaps. Seems to be the opposite of what it should be. So some of the Mefarshim say that it's just a different usage, that it's a language of Hodah. To be Misvade, to be Modeh, means both to confess and to express gratitude. And maybe that all of the discussion here, continuing also from the first Aliyah and the Bikurim recitations, this is all about the Hodah, it's all about Hakaras HaTov, Now, there is a linkage in general. It's not just a linguistic linkage, but between Hodah of Vidui and Hodah of Hakar Satov, you know, many who have commented that one of the reasons why it's so hard for people sometimes to express Hakar Satov, to express gratitude, is because it also is a somewhat of a confession. It's essentially a Hodah in the above Metziah sense, get some synergy, Mod de Mikzas. We talk about the Hodah that essentially creates an obligation between people. So if I mod it to you in a monetary context, it means now I'm going to owe you money. And if I mod it to you in the emotional context, if I thank you, so it has a similar connotation as well. It means essentially I owe you something, I'm in your debt, I needed you. I have some type of a dependent relationship on you, and that's hard for people to say. So it's not a completely different usage when we talk about Hodah in the sense of gratitude and Hodah in the sense of confession, in the sense of vidui. And all of it does share the same root and shares the same concept. So perhaps that's what we're talking about here. We don't mean vidui in any classical sense. We mean vidui in the sense of admitting something. That's possible. There are many other interpretations as well. The Sforno comments here that it's called vidui because we're acknowledging that there was a mistake in our history, there was an aveira in our history. The fact that the Levim are involved now and the Kohanim are involved as opposed to the Becharos, so that is a result of our sin with the Cheto Egel, that they're not the ones who are the key players here, and since that is being invoked in this context, the role of the Levim, so therefore there is a Hodah that's involved. So one possible suggestion, the Menches Chinuch in Tafrei Zayin, so he suggests that these Matanos, that this is now the final deadline for getting them out of the house, so maybe they should have been brought earlier. So we're essentially saying, I'm sorry that it's taken so long, I'm sorry that I'm only doing this now, and maybe the Hodah comes from that context. It could be. The Netziv has an interesting language. The Netziv has an interesting suggestion that he comments in a Sefer and Chumash that we say, Lo avarti mitzvah secha, v'lo shachachti. So he understands that it's really a Mechudish understanding. He says that Lo avarti mitzvah secha, so that taki is a positive statement. I haven't left out any active mitzvot. But, he says, there's another realm that's different than the active mitzvot, that's much harder. This is a reference to the averos of Dibor, such as Lashon Hara. But essentially, no one can come and say, I haven't spoken any Lashon Hara. You can come and say, I've done all the mitzvot I have to do, I blew shofar, I took a lulav, I did Bir Meiser, I did all the mitzvot I have to do. But to stand before God and say, I haven't spoken Lashon Hara, so that's essentially impossible. It's like a Gemara in Bava Basra. It says about the Jews, V'kula and Be'avak Lashon Hara, that all of them stumble on at least some form of Lashon Hara at some point or another. So essentially, what's the best we can do? So we say that, L'avarti mitzvah secha, so the mitzvahs I did. And in terms of Lashon Hara, Lo shachachti, I didn't forget that that's an issue. I'm at least aware of that enough that's the best I can claim. So since that is still a chisaron, so it's appropriate to use a Lashon Vidui. It's interesting because it parallels what we talked about in our very first discussion about Metziah 2 weeks ago, and we talked about the fact that there was a story about the Chafetz Chaim who was approached by a businessman who didn't want to purchase the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, wanted to purchase all of his other svarim, but the Sefer Chafetz Chaim he wasn't interested in buying. And the Chafetz Chaim, when he asked him why not, if you recall the story, so the person said that he thinks he can observe all the other halachos in the Mishnah Berurah and in the Machon Yisrael and in the Shem Olam and in the Lakutei Halachos on Kachim. None of that was going to be a problem for him. But the halachos of Lashon Hara, it's too hard in his context. He's not going to be able to observe all the halachos of Lashon Hara. So the Chafetz Chaim told him he should buy the book anyway. And he quoted that Rabbi Shmuel Salanter had said to him that this Sefer is so valuable, it's such a worthwhile project, that you've accomplished something, even if all that happens is one Jew reads this book, and, not that he changes his behavior, but he sighs. He says, if only I could observe these concepts. But I can't. What can you do? Moving on. So we discussed at the time the significance of that idea that there's a value in certain areas of halacha to even knowing about them, even if you're not going to follow them. despite the fact that we otherwise say mutav shushogin v'alyum mezidin. So we talked a little bit about that in our Hakdamah to Bava Metzia, why Lashon Hara and perhaps other mitzvos that we can relate to more easily, it might be different. So here you find this represented as well, that we hold it up as some kind of a milah, that even though we are nichshol in Lashon Hara, even though it's part of human nature that everyone occasionally says something he shouldn't, at least it's a milah to say, lo shachachti, I didn't forget about it, I'm still aware of it. So you might think it's a better excuse to say, I'm a shogeg, I don't know about it. So we say, no, that at least you should know I'm on top of it, I'm trying to keep it in mind, and that should be considered some type of a minor zchus. Okay. Others suggest different interpretations. If you look in the Sefer, the Paris Yosef HaChadosh, a beautiful Sefer in general, if I haven't talked about it, there is a Sefer called the Paris Yosef. It was written by Rav Yosef Pastanovsky, let's say about 100 years ago. And he is malakid from all over, Sefer Halacha, Sefer Musar, Sefer Chassidus, all kinds of fascinating things, and stories, and drushes. And he only got up to, as far as we have, to Sefer Vayikra. That's it. Pastanovsky. So he only got up to Vayikra as far as we have. That you can access on HebrewBooks.org. But we don't have from him Bamidbar and Dvarim. But there is a very, 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 very prolific contemporary Talmud Chacham by the name of Rabbi David Mandelbaum, and if you look through his list of writings, you'll see I left out one very. He's a very, very prolific writer. So he republished the Paris Yosef in a fancier edition, and then he added Bamidbar and Dvarim and Paris Yosef HaChadosh. So each one is two thick volumes on Bamidbar, two thick volumes on Dvarim. We have it here in the Beis Medrash downstairs. So in the Paris Yosef HaChadosh, he quotes some other interpretations. He quotes from the Zitshavir Rebbe that one of the simanim that you're doing something wrong is if you think you did everything right. A person who thinks he did everything right is probably missing something, and people who really are doing everything right are more concerned that they're leaving out something. So this language, a person who's going to say, even though the Torah is saying it's part of the Nusach, but a person who could really actually think that it's correct, that Asisi Kechol Asher Tzivisani, so that itself is an indication that he needs to straighten out a little bit. That itself, perhaps, we should call a vidui. He also quotes from the Satmar Rebbe that maybe we're saying that you should read the Pasuk, how should you read that? So I didn't violate any of your mitzvos. That's great. And I can't stop talking about it. I haven't forgotten it. This is something that I'm so proud of. I'm so proud of myself that I've done everything right. I can't forget about it. I keep talking about it. And that's a problem too, that a person is machzik tov to himself so much, and he's so proud of what he has accomplished that they can only focus on what he's done and not what else he needs to do. That's also perhaps some type of a vidui, some type of a confession. The Oznayim Torah has along similar lines that there is an idea, there's an interpretation in some of the Sifrei HaChasidus that we say that Kadosh Baruch Hu is Zocher Kol HaNishkachos. God remembers that which is forgotten. So what does that mean? He remembers that which is remembered too. He remembers everything. So what does it mean, Hizofer Kol HaNishkachos? So there is a relationship, an inverse relationship, that which we remember, so God, Kaviyachol, so to speak, doesn't pay as much attention to, and that which we forget, so Kadosh Baruch Hu is there to remind us. So in terms of our Averos, we forget our Averos, we're not worried about it, we're not in fulfillment of the idea, one of the Yesodos of Tshuva, that the Averos should always be present in our consciousness. So our Kadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, will remind us of the Avera. And the opposite is true also, that when it comes to our mitzvos, so if we remember them too much, if we're too proud of ourselves, so then our Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't, so to speak, feel need to credit us too much because we're providing enough of the credit. So our Kadosh Baruch Hu is Zocher Kol HaNishkachos, he's there for the opposite. In other words, if we remember our Averos, so we won't need so much of a reminder. If we remember, if we don't, then we will. If we remember our mitzvos too much, then again, the flip side, we won't need too much of a reminder in the positive sense. So better we shouldn't be speaking about these things so much. So that's the whole question on this whole nusach. But that's how the Satmar Rebbe also suggested, that maybe that's why it's called a vidui, that I love art mitzvos, great. V'lo shachachti, I can't stop talking about it. Ali?
So psychologically, it makes sense to say that when you're talking about your positives and saying that you've done all these things correctly, that in some way to promote guidance, so therefore to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But see what.
Correct. Right. So that's also part of the question. You have to figure out how much of this is because this is specifically the nusach, or how much does it reflect some kind of a psychological reality? This is what a person is likely to say, and even if that's the nusach, okay, but what does it represent in terms of human nature? Depending on which pshat you like, you'll have to interpret the pasuk consistent with that. That's part of the license given to darshan. You can have that type of flexibility. W, you had your end up. So those are some of the interpretations. I think you could say very differently, and this is something, again, very appropriate to this time of year, that there is a whole discussion, we'll maybe get into this a little bit more next week also for Parshas Nitzavim, of the nature of Vidui and its role in terms of tshuva. The Rambam has a comment when he talks about the mitzvah of tshuva, when he formulates the mitzvah of tshuva. So he says, what's the mitzvah of tshuva? That when a person wants to do tshuva, sheyisvada, that he should confess, however you want to translate it, he should do vidui when he feels that he wants to repent. So that formulation, that provoked a lot of commentary, the Menachas Chinuch and the Avodas Melech of Rav Menachem Krakowski. They thought, that maybe the Rambam is saying here, that there isn't actually a mitzvah of tshuva. There is an option of tshuva. If a person wants to do tshuva, so then we'll tell you how to do it. But there isn't actually a commandment in the Torah to do tshuva, which is very interesting, going into the Aser Shemei Tshuva to see things such a way. And Rav Soloveitchik, he thought that that is for sure not a feasible interpretation. Talks about this in the drashas that were printed in Ala Tshuva, which is available in Hebrew and English. So it can't be there's no mitzvah of tshuva. And as we'll possibly discuss next week, it seems like there's an explicit pasuk in Parshas Nitzavim that there is a mitzvah of tshuva. It's especially hard to believe within the Rambam. The Rambam, out of all the codifiers of halacha, so he gave us 10 prakim in Hilchos Tshuva. In Shulchan Aruch, we don't have such a focused section on Hilchos Tshuva the way the Rambam does. So to say that the Rambam thinks there's no mitzvah of tshuva, it's hard to believe. So suggests of Soloveitchik that that's not what the Rambam meant in that formulation. That in general, there is a certain type of setup that some mitzvahs have. And we'll have opportunity probably to comment on this a little bit more over the course of the pre-Yontif Shiurim. That usually you do a mitzvah and you fulfill that mitzvah at the same time as you do it. So you have a mitzvah to eat matzah, so you eat the matzah and you fulfill the mitzvah of matzah as you're eating it. You have a mitzvah to take a lulav, you fulfill that mitzvah the same time as you pick it up. But there are a handful of mitzvahs where there is a separation, where you perform the mitzvah, it's the maisa ha-mitzvah, but that is a means to an end. That is a step taking you to the kiyum ha-mitzvah. So the mitzvah itself might be more emotionally based. And since we can't command you to turn your emotions on and off, so instead we ask you to do something which is likely to provoke that emotion. So to give a very timely example, I have a concept of Simchas Yontif. So Simchas Yontif, we understand that, let's say nowadays, we fulfill that with basar v'yayin and new clothes and candy for the children. So that fulfillment, there you have the relationship that it seems that's really not the mitzvah itself. But that's the maisa ha-mitzvah. That's a kiyum ha-mitzvah. The actual goal of the mitzvah, Simchas Yontif, is that we should be happy on Yontif. However, that's an emotion, so we can't turn our emotions on and off. So instead, we are commanded to do an action which is likely to bring about that emotion. So if we eat basar v'yayin on Yontif, hopefully that will lead to us feeling a mindset of simcha on Yontif. So with that structure, you probably could understand tshuva as well. Says the Rav within the Rambam, is tshuva a mitzvah? Absolutely. No question about it. But what is tshuva? Tshuva is a state of mind, essentially. Tshuva is basically an awareness, an attitude. It's completely internal. So as much as the Ratzon HaTorah is that we should do tshuva, we can't command that as an action. You can't say, push a button and you've done tshuva. It has to be something that we can address as a maisa in order to have an actual mitzvah. So therefore, we could say that what does the Rambam mean when he talks about when you want to do tshuva, you should be misvada? What he means is that vidui is the maisa ha-mitzvah, and the kiyum ha-mitzvah is tshuva, is the changed awareness that comes along with tshuva. So therefore, really there is a mitzvah of tshuva, but vidui is the means to an end. It's what we do to bring about tshuva. It's the action that we can tell you to do or not to do that is likely to provoke tshuva. So if that's the case, hi.
Then why does the rabbi still say when you want to? You should just say...
Well, so want to is maybe over-translated. Well, that when you were doing tshuva, this is how you do it.
Oh, fine.
So okay, the mitzvah is... Right, the mitzvah is shei yisvada. So he talks about a mitzvah of vidui, but doesn't phrase tshuva as a mitzvah, leading the possibility to emerge that he doesn't see tshuva as a mitzvah. And this is what the Rebbe is saying, that no, he's saying that the mitzvah to do vidui, that is the mitzvah of tshuva. So if that's the case, so then let's translate vidui a little bit more halachically. So do we translate it as a confession? Or we could translate in halachic terms as a statement, a verbal declaration that is likely to provoke tshuva, that is conducive to bringing about a mindset of tshuva. So within that broader definition, so you could say, fine, so what's the kind of content that you normally find in vidui? I'm a loser, I messed up, I'm a jerk, I'm a terrible person. That's normally what we see with tshuva, with vidui, because that type of mindset will provoke us to try to be better. Chatosi, avisi, poshaiti, that will hopefully provoke us to change course. But that's not the only Yetzer Hara that exists in the world. In other words, yes, there is the Yetzer Hara that I'm perfect, I've got nothing to change. So then you need to tell yourself it's not true. You need to be aware that there are flaws that need to be addressed. But that's not the only problematic mindset. Maybe that's the number one problematic mindset, that's the first one that comes to mind. But there's another Yetzer Hara that's also very real. And you could also worry about that Yetzer Hara. That's the mindset that a person has when he says, yes, I know that I've done bad things. I know that I have committed averos. But I don't believe I'm capable of doing anything better. I don't think I can be any different than I am now. So that person is also not going to do tshuva. Not like the first guy who thinks he doesn't need to do tshuva because he's perfect. But he's not going to do tshuva because he feels it's not something possible for him. He has maxed out his capability. This is the best he's ever going to be. So to that we say, you have to realize there are times when you've done everything correctly. There are times when you're able to say, Lo avariti mimitzvosecha v'lo shechachti. Asisi k'chol asher tzvisani. If you're capable at times of having done everything right, so then you're capable at other times as well. So reminding yourself that you are at times able to do everything perfectly, that can also be a venue to tshuva, that can also be a path that takes you to changing your path, changing your actions in a positive sense. So we could suggest that that's how we understand vidui, not to translate it as confession necessarily, but if we want to translate it halachically as a verbal declaration that will lead to tshuva, so maybe both types fit in that definition. The recognition that you're not perfect and you have to change, or the recognition that you have been capable of better in the past and therefore you can change. Both of those perhaps are vehicles for tshuva. There is another idea that some of the Meforshim point out. Here, Rav Nassim Gishtetner in a Sefer and Chumash and Laharis Nassim has something along these lines, and others point this out as well, that it could spur you to tshuva in a different way. that if you are forced to go through this declaration, specifically as Ellie's point, if this is what the Torah wants us to say, so then it's a very uncomfortable feeling if it's not true. Right? If you are forced to come and declare, and you find this, you know, let's say in government forms also, let's say you sign your tax returns, and you have to actually state out loud, so to speak, or you have to put in writing with your name that you're not leaving out anything, that you're not misrepresenting anything. So that's not so much bragging as it is intimidating you if it's not true. That if this is not actually in line with your actual behavior, so when the government tells you they want you to put it on your tax form, they want you to sign that you're not misrepresenting anything, they're not asking you to brag, they're asking you to feel very uncomfortable about signing that when it's not actually accurate. And so too, if the Torah says you're supposed to come and declare that you've done everything right, and now you're mechuyev to declare that, if that's the way we read it, so then all the more so if that happens not to be the case, so then that is perhaps also, hopefully also going to spur you to live up to that. Essentially, you could call it a moral checklist, that we have this list of what we're supposed to be like, and when we read off that list, if we notice that it doesn't correspond to reality, so then we will probably feel more motivated to do something about it, and by that focus we also are pushed towards tshuva. So that's another context in which the term vidoy might be appropriate here as well. The Aznayim LaTorah points out also that in terms of you think vidoy is hard when you're talking about how terrible you are, so yeah, that's a hard vidoy to do. But there, if you're exaggerating, if you're a little bit off, okay, so no skin off your back. If you say a little bit too much in your vidoy and the seres made tshuva during the slichas, you paint yourself in too bad of a light, so okay, so you know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take that as extra piety, so to speak, and it's not going to be a problem for you. But if you're praising yourself and you say too much, so you realize that puts you in a more awkward position, that puts you in a position of a politician since election season, so you know this comes up all the time, that if a politician gets up there and says one thing that's a little bit more than actually factual about his history, so he's going to get raked over the coals. So if he says that if he's too self-deprecating, nothing's going to happen. But if he says something that puts himself in a positive light, then it's 1 degree past what's actually verifiable, so he's going to be put in a very embarrassing situation. The blogs are immediately going to pounce on him and going to check every prat. So too, if you're going to say something which goes beyond what you've actually accomplished, it's going to put you in the hot seat. It's going to put you in a very uncomfortable position, and maybe that will motivate a quick rectification, so that in this sense, again, the word vidoy is appropriate. It's a path that takes us towards tshuva. Okay, so we just said that as an introduction. We haven't actually focused on what these words might mean. So to go back to the beginning of the Aliyah, so the Torah tells us that Kisachaleh la'aseres kol maser tivoscha v'shana hashlishes shnas hamaser. So you have finished to gather all of your tivu, all of your maser. So now this is the third year, which the Torah calls the shnas hamaser. And Rashi emphasizes here that this year there's no Maiser Sheni. Shnas HaMaiser, Rashi says, Shana She'ein Noheg Ba Ela Maiser Echad Mishnei Maisers. It's an interesting language. We call it Shnas HaMaaser. It's the year when we only have one of the two Maisers that we had the previous year plus a different one. It's a hard way to understand what the emphasis is. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has an interesting comment in his Sefer Darash Moshe, where he's also addressing this whole vidui question. And he says, why is Rashi telling us that there's no Maaser Sheni that year? So Maaser Sheni, first of all, just to put it in context, Maaser Sheni is a very spiritual mitzvah, essentially. There is such a term. That the whole point of Maaser Sheni is that it focuses us on themes of Kedusha, on having to live our lives with a certain mindset in a certain context, go to the Beis HaMikdash, go to Yerushalayim. So Maaser Sheni is about living life in a more exalted state. And the year when you don't have this Maaser, you don't have Maaser Sheni, so then we could ask the question, how do you feel about not having it? Are you happy or do you miss it? And as Rav Moshe discusses over there, that if you're happy to be relieved, so then it's as if you'll only do this when you're forced to. Okay, so that's something, but it's clearly not what we're striving for. But if you miss the spiritual opportunity, if you feel the lack, so then that shows that it's something that you want to be connected to, and that the only reason you're not doing it now is because you don't have the opportunity. But then we can credit you with even more. Then we could say that if there was such a mitzvah, you'd for sure be doing it. And you're just essentially on this now, because you don't have the opportunity, but we credit you as if you want to do it. And he suggests that that's what we mean. We talk about vidui again, it's a type of self-check. So we see, how do you feel when the mitzvah is not in front of you? Is it something that you miss, or is it something that you could live without? And that's also a part of the self-examination that's connected to vidui. It's a little bit evocative of an idea. I know that Vital Rudinsky spoke here recently. I think I heard from him once in a different context. I think he was talking about Rabbi Yashiv. It said the following psak, if I remember correctly, that there was somebody who was somewhere in Eretz Yisrael and he needed to say Kaddish and the town where he was, so that he missed the last Maariv. And he traveled an hour to Davin Maariv with the minyan somewhere else. And afterwards he asked the Shaila, was he really mechuyev to travel so far for the Maariv? And if I remember the story correctly, the answer he was given is that he wasn't obligated to do that. But I am makana your Maariv, I'm jealous of your Maariv. Meaning what? He said that there's a yesod, that in Shemayim, when you get schar from mitzvos, so you get schar based on the hardest time the mitzvah ever was, the hardest time you ever had to go through to perform that mitzvah. And then all of the Maarivs of your life are all evaluated on that scale. Why? Because even though the rest are easy, but apparently if you're willing to go to such a length, it means that that's what you would do if you had to. Most of the time you don't have to. But the scale now is set by the greatest distance, the greatest effort you would expend. So he's saying something similar here, that if you miss the Maaser Sheni, if you wish it was there, so then that shows that you wish you could perform the mitzvah now and you're just not given the opportunity. So therefore we can give you schar for that now also, and that's also perhaps this vidui process. There are other interpretations also to this idea of Shnas HaMaser, of calling this year all of a sudden the year of the Maser. If all of these 6 years of the seven are all Maser years, so why are we calling this year, or I guess two of the 7 years, the third and the sixth year, calling it a Shnas HaMaser? So the Nitziv emphasizes that there is a unique quality, and other Sfarim have this as well, to the Maser Ani. That the Maaser Ani is the one that is covered to Kadosh Baruch Hu, because it's the one where you're really focused on others. But in terms of Maaser Sheni, so it's important that you're focused on your own spiritual development. In the case of the Maaser Rishon that goes to the Levi, so there, that goes to somebody else, but you kind of feel like you're essentially paying his salary, that's the deal. He doesn't get any land, he gets paid with the Maaser. So you don't feel like there's so much nobility or so much chesed involved in providing Maaser to the Levim. But the Maaser that's given to the Aniyim, so that's the real expression of the Kavod of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that's the Hey Hayidia, the Ha Maaser. Maybe that's why this year, when Maaser Ani is focused, that we get this language of Ha Maaser. The Hafla points out also that it's the Shnas Ha Maaser, because the Aniyim can come at any time, and you'll be providing them with a Maaser. So as opposed to the other two Maasers, this is one which is happening constantly throughout the year. So it's your year of Maaser, so to speak. It's the year of the ongoing involvement in Maaser. So perhaps it gets the reference for that purpose. And the Pasuk ends off, V'yachlu b'sharecha v'saveyu, that they should eat within your gates. So the Sefrei has a comment that means that we don't take the peros from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. But the Vilna Gaon has a girsa there, you don't take the aniyim out to Chutz La'aretz. And as the later Sfarim explain, that this means that you shouldn't think that if there are too many aniyim, that you should say, okay, they should go to Chutz La'aretz and get their parnasa from there. But you should feel the achrayis to continue supporting them b'sharecha, that they have to also get sustenance from your maaser aniyim. You don't say, you're too many already, you should be sent outwardly. So this idea of a focus on B'sharecha, which we associate with Yerushalayim, it sounds like there's a din of Meiser, and there's a din of Sharecha, both for the Peros and for the Aniyim. So in the Sefer Mikdash Mordechai Ilan, so he thought this was relevant to a Tshuva the Chassam Sofer. We have, when we talk about Hilchos Tzedaka, so there is a whole system of prioritization. We see Aniya Yircha Kodmin, that first you give the priority to those who are closest to you. And then the next priority it talks about also is that Aniya Eretz Yisrael. You have the poor people of Eretz Yisrael, so they're also ranked very high in terms of the priority of Tzedaka. So is there any kedimus given to Aniya Yerushalayim? Out of all of the cities in Eretz Yisrael, do we prioritize Yerushalayim? So the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva where he thought that was the case. The Torah Tumimah in his commentary to Parshas Re'eh, he also says on his own something like that, that we prioritize Yerushalayim. Others didn't think that was true. Rav Osner has a tshuva where he says he thinks that that was true. Then we'd have to define Yerushalayim as the old city, and that's a big chiddush, because it presumably would be connected to Kedushas Yerushalayim. Rav Chaim Kanievsky has a comment in one of his svarim that maybe the whole question should be totally on whether there is Kedushas Yerushalayim, is Manazah or not. It's a whole discussion in the Rishonim. So it's questionable if this Yesod is correct or not, but the Chassam Sofer, who had such an idea, so the Mordechai Ilan thought that this was perhaps a little bit of a remez to this, that the Aniyim within Yerushalayim, there is some type of special significance. Hi.
Doesn't the Rambam already give the Tzedaka priorities and mention Yerushalayim over rest of Eretz Yisrael in terms of priority, or no?
The Rambam in terms of priorities of Tzedaka?
Am I wrong?
You could be right, but I'm not sure where it... he talks about Kedusha levels that's prioritized, but in terms of Tzedaka, so the Gemara and the Midrashim talk about Eretz Yisrael, but Yerushalayim is Chiddush. Chassam Sofer and others have that Chiddush, and others question it. Maybe. Could be. Okay, so then the pasuk goes on to say, the next pasuk, the second of the four pasukim, says Yamarta lefnei Hashem Elokecha. So now Yamarta, this is the vidui. This is what you say. Again, the vidui language is from Chazal, it's from the Mishnah and Sota. The Torah tells us to say lefnei Hashem Elokecha. So lefnei Hashem Elokecha, does that mean that it has to be in the Beis Hamikdash? Is that what that language of Nei Hashem Elokecha means? So it was a big machlokas rishon, just to be aware. That the Rambam says this could be recited anywhere. And the Ravid says he thinks that was a big mistake. That he thinks that this means that Lefnei Hashem Elokecha, that it has to be Bifnei HaBayis. This is in Meister Sheni, Perikir Aleph, Halacha Dalet. So is that he thinks the Rambam was incorrect about this? Is a Tosus and Soto also. And Daf Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph, where he says this requires the Azara. That's why it says, Lefnei Hashem Elokecha. So this was a big machlokas. If you look in the Paras Yosef HaChadosh, he has a lot of discussion about this, about what exactly is true about this. But in any event, you say it somewhere, you say, Biarti HaKodesh Min HaBayis. I have taken this holy material, I've taken these maestros out of my house. V'gam nesativ la'levi, la'ger la'yosom v'la'amana. And I've given them to who I have to give them to. I've given them to the Levit. I've given them to the Aniyim who need it. Kechol mitzvascha asher tzivisani. I've done everything that you have asked me to do. Lo avarti mitzvosacha v'lo shachachti. So I didn't leave out any of the mitzvos, and I didn't forget anything. So this language, lo avarti mitzvosacha, so there's a lot to say about that. Rashi has an interesting comment. Say lo avarti mitzvosacha lo hifrashti mimin al she'eino mino v'min acharesh al yashem. So I wasn't mafresh from one substance on behalf of another substance. What does that mean? So there is a comment about this of Yosef Tzvi Dushinsky, say for Taurus Maharitz. So he suggests what this means more al piderach hadrush, that we say lo avarti mitzvosacha, that sometimes people think that they can do averos and they'll also do mitzvos, and the mitzvos will outweigh the averos. That will be the plan, that they'll do whatever they want in terms of negative behavior, but the mitzvos will outweigh it. And that's not a helpful attitude. That's not an attitude that a Kodesh Baruch Hu likes so much. So we say instead, lo avarti mi mitzvosacha, that I didn't do an avera that I thought I could do because of my mitzvos. Lo avarti mi mitzvosacha. And that's what Rashi is perhaps being merames to, that l'hafrashi mimin al she'eino mino, that if you're going to do a hafrashi, you have to be dealing with the same substance. You can't mix different things. So you might think, all right, I could do an aveira here and a mitzvah here, we'll match it. That's not the way tshuva works. Tshuva works means you have to deal with the same action and try to convert it into something positive, or try to erase the problem. And that's perhaps what we are alluding to here. That's an interesting discussion in general, again, this time of year, because the famous kasha, maybe we'll have an opportunity to talk about it a little bit more, is what the Bali Musar talk about why do we say that the Aseres Yemei Tshuva should be called that? Why should they exist, the Aseres Yemei Tshuva? That if the whole idea of the Aseres Yemei Tshuva is that we have an imbalance, or we have too much of a balance, rather, that we need to be rov mitzvos, and instead it's 50-50, we're beinonim, and we need to have more mitzvos than we have averos. So there's a much easier way to do things. Let's just have the Aseres Yemei Mitzvah. Just have as many mitzvahs done as possible, and that'll push us over the line in the other direction. So we'll have more mitzvahs because of all the mitzvahs that we do. So apparently that doesn't work. Apparently we have to actually do tshuva, we have to actually deal with the Averis themselves, and we'll talk about that maybe more a little bit next week, but that's perhaps what's being referenced here, that the Levarta Mitzvah Secha, that we can't rely on the fact that our mitzvos will outweigh the averos, but rather we have to actually deal with hafrashas hamin el hamin. We have to deal with the min itself, and not try to compensate from other places. So this v'lo shachachti, this is the basis of a lot of discussion. There's a lot of confusion on this pasuk v'lo shachachti, and we probably won't be able to address it in a satisfactory way, because all the different approaches are still going to have kashas, are still going to be contradictions. Because this idea of lo shachachti, so what does Rashi say? Lo shachachti milvarechecha l'hafrashas maisras. So I didn't forget to recite a bracha on the separation of maisras. So that's a very difficult interpretation of the pasuk, even though it's based on a mishnah and Maaser Sheni, and a Gemara as well that appears in Brachos and Daf Mem and Beis. Is Daf Yomi up there yet? What's Daf Yomi up to?
Lamed
Vav. Okay, so in a few days you'll see this Gemara and Daf Mem and Beis. So it interprets this pasuk. So what's the problem with saying this is talking about the bracha and Hafreshus Maaser?
It's not a
deraisa. It's not a deraisa. Right, to say that's what the pasuk means, I didn't forget to make a bracha. So it's a problem in Rashi, at least. And the Mizrahi and the Goyariyeh, they all comment on this, that the bracha is drabanan. So the easy interpretation is to say that he doesn't mean the actual bracha, but he means divrei shavach, that we should praise God, that we should be happy for the mitzvah, that that should be our feeling, that it doesn't represent necessarily this actual nusach, but it represents an attitude which the bracha later came and formalized. We have a similar idea. If that's the pshat, I think you have to use a similar pshat in Rishon. Now, at the very beginning of Parshas Kisavo, so we're told V'haya Kisavo al-Aretz, that when you come into the land, so you'll do the mitzvah of Bikurim, but there is an idea that Chazal have, that V'haya Kisavo al-Aretz, that you get to the land in the schus of the mitzvah of Bikurim. That's a very difficult idea, because it's a contradiction to the first Rashi in the Parsha, quotes the Gemara in Kedushin, that lo nischayvu bikurim at shekivshu es aretz v'chalkua. That the whole chiyuv of bikurim only came up once they first entered the land. So how could we say that we got to come into the land in the schus of bikurim? Clearly we're not fulfilling. Sorry?
The schus is able to do.
So it's a kind of a, it's kind of an advance payment, so to speak, that because we should be able to get Bikurim if we get the land. You could read it that way. But it sounds like it means we did something first to get the schus to get into the land. So presumably the mitzvah of Bikurim is a formal expression of, let's say, Hakaras HaTov. And the emotion of Hakaras HaTov, the reality of Hakaras HaTov, was there beforehand. So because of that schus, so then we're given an opportunity to formalize that through the actual Bikurim. So you could say that's what this means as well, that it's not a reference to the actual bracha in the Torah context. The Torah is not talking about the specific bracha that was formalized later, but the attitude that's represented by the bracha, so that's what's being suggested here. The problem is, it's nice pshat by itself. It's hard to say that's what Rashi means, especially because Rashi in Brachos is very specific. When the Gemara has this drasha in Brachos and Daf Mem and Beis, so it could work within the Mishnah, but in the Gemara it's a lot harder. There Rashi says very specifically, what am I talking about? And explaining that Gemara, he says, Asher Kishonah Mitzvosov Itzivano Lahafra Shumus Umaishas. It's very explicit, that's what he's talking about. So it makes a lot of the interpretations difficult. The Mariel Diskin says, apparently it must be that this bracha is Daraisa, just like Brachas HaTorah. It's probably Daraisa. Brachas HaTorah is Machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban, but many assume that Brachas HaTorah is Daraisa, so maybe for some reason this bracha is Daraisa as well. It's difficult because that also is against the explicit Gemara. So you're going to have a hard time coming up with a pshat that's going to make everything work. But if you have been doing Daf Yomi, so then I guess about 3 weeks ago, so there is a discussion the Gemara has about whether you can say Shema without speaking it out loud. And the Gemara brings a comparison to somebody who wants to be Mafresh Truma and is not able to speak. And the question is also, if you could be Yotzei Truma without speaking out loud, so apparently it could be Yotzei Shema as well. And the Gemara says, no, it's not a good comparison, because, right, the Gemara says that, first of all, the Truma, it's only the Bracha that we're talking about. So the Bracha, loud the Bracha, Talia Milsa, says the Gemara, the Bracha is not the mitzvah itself. We'll talk more about that in a second. And, says the Gemara, the Bracha is the Rabbanan. So again, you're going to have a very hard time making all the Makoros fit. That somehow Rashi associates this with the Bracha on Truma. And if you want to allegorize it, say it's not the actual Bracha, so you have to deal with the Rashi in Daf Mem. If you want to say that we're not talking about a Drabbanan, we're talking about a Daraisa, so you have to deal with the Gemara on Daf Tazayin. It's hard to make all the Makoros work, but there's a lot of discussion about what possibly we're talking about. Or are we talking about some other Bracha on the Mitzvah? The Shem Yishmuel quotes from the Avnei Nezer that it's a reference to Shechianu. Apparently that's a Daraisa. The others suggest that maybe it's a reference to Alam Michia. There's an opinion in Rishonim that Alam Michia is Daraisa, that it's included in the Daraisa of benching. But again, it's not going to work with some of our texts here, which are much more explicit. The Hartzvi, Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, in the Sefer they published all the Torah from him, so he suggests that there is a Yerushalmi that sounds like the Birchas HaMitzvos are a concept in the Torah, and maybe that's what we're talking about. It's a little bit difficult. The Emes Liakov, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, in his Sefer, so he notes that the reason we have such an interpretation, and specifically about a bracha, and not just Divrei Shevach in general, says because the whole language, lo avarti mitzvosecha v'lo shachachti, if we take that together, so it sounds like it's not just that you didn't do something, but that there's some avera that you avoided. It's not just that you, lo shachachti, you didn't forget to do something nice, to say some words of praise, but it sounds like you avoided some avera. So what would the avera be? So the way he understands it, it must mean that to do the mitzvah in an incomplete way, to do the mitzvah without making the bracha, that's the avera that you didn't do. That's difficult as well, because again, we assume that a bracha is really a secondary bracha, saying a ma'akvos, that brachas don't take away from the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Again, that's what that same Gemara we mentioned a few minutes ago, the love the bracha talia milsa, that the mitzvah is done even without the bracha. But there is such an idea, the Avnei Miluim and his Chuvas, the author of the Kedosh HaChoshen, and his Sefer Avnei Miluim, in the back they have the Chuvas Avnei Miluim. So there in Siman Yud in the Chuvas, he seems to say that it's really prohibited to do a mitzvah without a bracha. It's hard to understand halacha l'maisa. We normally assume that there are circumstances we do the mitzvah without a bracha. But perhaps that's what's being alluded to here. I didn't do the mitzvah without the bracha that is required. There is a whole discussion in the Parsha Yosef Achadah. She quotes from one of the Gerebis from the Emre Emes like this, that when we talk about a bracha on food, a bracha sanenin, so the Gemara does suggest that there is a svara which is compelling sometimes on a level in the Torah, that it's wrong to benefit from this world, that it's just intellectually wrong for a person to get joy from this world without acknowledging God's creation. So one could apply that svara to mitzvahs as well. One could say that mitzvahs are spiritual benefits, and that it would be wrong to not invoke a bracha first. Rav Soloveitchik did have a similar approach in talking about the idea of Birchas HaMitzvos, the bracha has got to be over Las Yasim, it's got to be specifically before the bracha, before the mitzvah. And it's Machlokas Rishonim, the Hagos, Ashri, and Chulin, has a day that if you forget to make a bracha before the mitzvah, you could do the bracha after the mitzvah as well. And if the other Rishonim, like the Rambam, assume the bracha specifically has to be before the mitzvah, so Soloveitchik suggested once that the idea is that just like food, you need a matir, so to speak, you need permission to take God's food. So too, a mitzvah is essentially approaching God. It's kind of taking a liberty in your spiritual relationship, and you need to knock on the door first. You need some type of acknowledgement, and therefore a mitzvah without that is missing something very fundamental, and that's what we're saying, lo'avarti mitzvosecha v'lo shachachti. Rebecca Kamensky also suggests that you could look at a different angle here, and you could say that when you're talking about a mitzvah like Hafrashas, Trumas, and Maaseres, so there are two elements here. That on the one hand, if somebody is Mafrish Truma, if somebody's going to take out, separate Truma from his produce, so he's accomplishing two things. One is he's taking the Truma away from the status of Tevel. It would have been usher for him to eat from this food otherwise. So it would have been Tevel. So now once he takes away the Truma, so the food is mutter to be used. And Trumas and the Maaseres takes away everything that needs to be taken. And there's also a chiyuv to give it to the Kohen, give it to the Levi, give it to whoever's supposed to receive it. So you might not know what somebody's intentions are. Somebody's mafresh, Trumas, and Maaseres. So maybe he's just interested in making his food mutter, and maybe he doesn't care at all about the mitzvah component of the chiyuv nesina, of giving it to who's supposed to receive it. So the bracha, in this case, is an indication that he is interested specifically in the mitzvah. He's interested in why he's doing this, not just to make his food edible now, but also to give it to who's supposed to get it. And therefore, that's itself significant, and that's part of the whole context here. It fits well with the rest of the pasuk. I've given the maaseres to everyone who's supposed to get it, and lo avarti mitzvosecha v'lo shachachti, and I didn't forget, while I was doing the hafrasha, that I was doing it for this purpose, I was doing it in order to make sure that people who need it, get it. Okay, that's a possible interpretation, but again, this whole idea is very difficult because the general assumption is that Birchas HaMitzvos are Drabanan, so to say the Pasuk is referring to this specifically is a difficult thing to say, so it's much more likely that it's referring to some type of attitude represented by the different suggestions we've mentioned, but we have to then deal with the Makoros that do seem to very specifically address the Bracha of Hafrashas Maaseres. So then the pasuk goes on to say more things that we're proud about, more things that we're bragging about. Lo achalti bi'oni mimenu, lo bi'arti menu b'tamei, lo nosati menu l'meis. A lot of things I didn't do wrong. So what do all these things mean? It's not 100% clear. The Rashbam, in his commentary, if you look also in the Meshech Chachma, he goes through some of these comments. The Rashbam thinks that lo achalti bi'oni, he has a pasuk in Eov that suggests that reference Ba'oni is a reference to Gezel. To say I wasn't involved in Gezel. V'lo bi'arti menu b'tamei. Tamei is Tumas Arayus. I wasn't involved in Arayus. V'nosati menu l'meis. Meis in Uziv Chemesim is a reference to Avodah Zarah. So I wasn't involved in Gezel. I wasn't involved in Arayus. I wasn't involved in Avodah Zarah. So all of that you're talking about here as part of your viduing, which is consistent also with the idea that we mentioned a few minutes ago, that you're not trying to do averus in one place and having mitzvahs elsewhere compensate. You're saying all of these major averus I stayed away from as well. I'm not trying to use this as an excuse. There's more comment on Golovansati Venu Lemes that Rashi has a comment over there that, what do you mean I didn't give it to a mace? I didn't take this produce and convert it into an aron or into shrouds for a maize. So the Ramban has a very hard time with this because the Ramban says that why is that the focus then? Because you can't use it for clothes for a living person either. You have to eat this produce. So to say I didn't make it into clothing for a maize is no worse than making it to clothing for a person, for a living person. So why is that something to focus on? So the Rambam, in Mishneh Torah, the Rambam says it means that lemeis is opposed to for sustenance, for life. That anything that you use for life, that's what maaser sheni is supposed to be for, to keep you alive, like food. And to use it for a non-life-sustaining purpose, that's what we mean by lemeis. And the Ramban doesn't like that interpretation at all. He doesn't think it means that. So he has his own discussion about what exactly we meant to understand by Nasati Menu Lemes. Discusses, I think, the possibility that maybe he's saying even Lemes, even as a mace, that would be a mitzvah, presumably, for an Aron for Tachrichin. That you didn't do. So certainly when it's not a mitzvah, that you also didn't do. Okay, could be. But in any event, these are things that we're proud about. And we say, Shamaiti b'kol Hashem Elokai, Asisi k'chol Asher Tzivisani. So Rav Yossi Tzvi talks about that as well. So what do you mean, Shamaiti b'kol Hashem Elokai? He says that's a reference to the Chachamim, Shebechol Dor V'Dor. That that's where you have an opportunity to listen to the voice. Most of us, we don't listen to God's voice directly. But you can listen to the Chachamim, that's considered Shamati Bekol, that's as if you're listening to God's directions. And that's why I say, Kichol Asher Tzvisani, not Kol Asher Tzvisani, but that the voice of the Chachamim is on an authoritative level, as if it was God's command. So that's the Pshat in the Pasuk, Kichol Asher Tzvisani. Okay, then the last Pasuk of this Aliyah, we'll just be able to squeeze this in, is that the Pasuk says, Hashkifa, we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashkifa Mimon Kodshecha, from your holy place, you should take a look, you should survey everything, Min HaShemayim, Uvarech Es Amcha Es Yisrael, V'yasa Adama Shenasat Olanu, bless all the land and all of the produce, Kasher Nishbat Elavuseinu Eretz Zavas Cholav Udvash, like you have promised to our ancestors this land of milk and honey. A little bit of discussion what that means, because Eretz Zavas Cholav Udvash was not given to Avram Avinu as a Havtacha, so you have to figure out how that fits. That was really given to maybe to the Otsim Mitzrayim. It's a whole discussion towards the language Avoseinu appropriate. That's a separate discussion. But the word that attracts the most attention in this pasuk is Hashkifa. We tell God to survey, to look over the land. So Rashi in Parshas Vayera comments, based on the Yerushalmi, that Yerushalmi is a Meister Sheni in Hey, that they have a language, Kol Hashkafa L'ra, that anytime the Torah uses the word Hashkafa, you can have whatever drush you want on this word, but anytime the Torah uses the word hashkafa, that it's bad, that it's not something that portends good things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks over the world and Chalila punishes them. So here, this is the one time that it's a positive context. We say, look over the world and give a bracha. So that's what the Yerushalmi says. You see the power of stuck of the Maaser Ani to take this word, which is usually used in a bad context, and to make it something positive. So many of the Mefarshim say, well, that's terrific, but it would have been easier just to use a positive word. Why do we need to use a negative word and have Staka change it from something bad into something good? If Hashkafa is normally negative, let's take it into something, let's take a positive word instead. So Rav Schwab has a comment about this where he says that we're kind of stuck. Again, this is back to Ellie's point, that this bragging that we're saying, everything, lo'avartim tzusacha v'lo shachachti, so Mamela, that's going to provoke a midas hadin, that's going to provoke a judgment of God looking carefully to see if we're really meritorious. So we'd rather not say anything. We'd rather not invoke this whole process of din, but we're stuck because that's a nusach that we have to say. So once we're already forced into that context, so then we're promised, don't worry, the midah of staka will turn things around, and the negativity that's normally associated with such careful scrutiny, normally that's dangerous for us, but the midah of staka will make it into something positive. Sorotskin, the Yoznayim Latoris, he notes that it's not like we can avoid judgment forever. We're coming towards Yom HaDin. There's going to be at some point the Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to look at us. So we'd rather he'd look at us when we put our best foot forward. So now we're involved in Staka, we're involved in this active Chesed, in Maaser Ani. So we say, Kadosh Baruch Hu, now's a good time for the test. Now we're prepared. If you're going to come and pick a survey, so now would be a good time when you know the teacher's going to check on you. Everyone's on your best behavior. So you say, now's a good time. We're on your best behavior. Now's a time when you should come and look at us. There's also another theme that one could comment here, that in general, that the whole idea of Hashkafa L'ra is that the Kadosh Baruch Hu looking very carefully at our behavior is something that is dangerous. And so too, when we look at how much we're profiting and how wealthy we are and how much resources we have and how much bracha we have, so again, that's an audit that can be dangerous for us. The Kadosh Baruch Hu might decide that we don't deserve to have all of that, may decide that this is not really appropriate and that we need to be chalila readjusted and to not have all of this. So we can't avoid that by itself. But we can say the following, that at some point the Kadosh Baruch Hu, you're going to come and assess all the bracha that we have, and you're going to decide if we're worthy enough to keep it. So look what we do with it, that we have all of this bracha, and we take it for tzedakah, we give Maaser Ani, we give the Maasers that we're commanded to do. So we, even if we don't deserve to have this riches, even if this is not something that should be ours, but at least we use it for halakha purposes, at least we use it for supporting others, we use it for tzedakah, so therefore let that be the perspective that's taken, that if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to look at us and is going to evaluate, is this something we should have? So recognize that there are times, hopefully, when we use it for a very hallowed purpose, and that should justify our being the guardians over such bracha, and we should continue to have received bracha, and we should be judged l'tov. So again, many of these themes very relevant as we enter Slichos. I had wanted to talk about Slichos itself, which we are starting mostly Shabbos. Doesn't look like we have time for that, so I don't know if it's kedai to start it now. But maybe on Sunday, so our agenda is we want to do Eilat Metzias, we do want to do that, but maybe we'll also just spend a few minutes talking about the concept of Slichos, and I'll just emphasize one point before Slichos start, and then we'll adjourn, is that, you know, there is some discussion why we start Slichos when we do. By we, I mean Ashkenazim, Sfardim start already from Rosh Chodesh Elul, but the Ashkenazic practice is to have two factors decide when Slichos start. That they start on a Motzoi Shabbos, we could talk about that maybe a little bit later, and they start at least 4 days before Rosh Hashanah. So if Rosh Hashanah was later in the week, it could be the Motzoi Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah. If it's earlier in the week, it's going to be the Motzoi Shabbos a week and a half before Rosh Hashanah. And the idea of 4 days, the whole discussion why it is, so one of the suggestions is that the 4 days that there are Aseres Yemei Tshuva, so the 10 days of tshuva should be days in which we could be fasting. It should be fastable days. And during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, 4 of the days are not eligible for fasting, because one of them is going to be a Shabbos, a Mela, and one will be Erev Yom Kippur, when there's a mitzvah to eat. And 2 of them will be Rosh Hashanah. The assumption is that you're not able to fast those days either. It's a little bit of a discussed assumption, but let's assume for now you can't fast on Rosh Hashanah either. So in order to make up those 4 days, so we have to start 4 days before Rosh Hashanah in order to give us 10 days of tshuva and kindness. And there's a lot to say about that, but just one idea to go into Shabbos with, that the Soloveitchik commented that you could have thought that the whole idea of Aseres Yemei Tshuva is just kind of an accident of the calendar. So you have Rosh Hashanah on the first day of Tishrei, and you have Yom Kippur on the 10th day of Tishrei. So all the days in the middle, so that's days of tshuva. It happens to end up to be 10. But apparently that's not the case. Apparently there is a chachma here that there is a process of tshuva that requires us to actually utilize these 10 days. And if it happens to be that we're not going to get 10 in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, so we'll have to start earlier. We'll have to get 4 days from before that in order to get the 10 days of tshuva, which however you get to 10, that's a whole separate discussion. But it highlights the fact that these are not just passive opportunities. Okay, we might as well use this time for tshuva while there's a gap between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but that there is an active process of tshuva that we have to go through, and if we're not going to find enough time then, we have to start earlier. And so essentially that process is starting with Motzei Shabbos, it's more than 4 days, but it's starting with the Slichos process. That's what it's meant to represent, and it's a very important mindset to focus on as we begin the Slichos, essentially the advanced Aseres Yemei Tshuva period that begins Motzei Shabbos. Maybe we'll say a few more words about it on Sunday, and again also continue with Eilat Metzias and some of the themes that are relevant to that section. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos, and it should be a time of Mazel Bracha, and we'll see you guys willing on Sunday.